This is Jean McMillan. The date today is December 8th, 2022. I am interviewing Reverend John Carter, who's going to talk about his three loves, forestry, music, and ministry. But first, we'll start with the hard stuff. What is your name? And what is your birth date?
February 4th, 1944.
And your birthplace?
New York City.
And you graduated from Yale in
1967.
And you then moved to Alexandria, Virginia in 1984 to attend the Virginia Theological Seminary.
Correct.
But what did you do in between?
Well, after Yale, I joined the Peace Corps.
And where did you go?
South Korea.
And how many years?
I was there for 4 years, including training.
Did you enjoy it?
Yes. Yeah, I loved it.
And I assume you had to learn Korean.
Learn as much as I could. It's a very hard language. But I love learning languages, so.
Oh, bless you. Bless you. And when you got back from the Peace Corps, then what?
When I got back from the Peace Corps, I was kind of at loose ends for a while. And there'd been a lot going on in the United States during that time between 1967 and 71. And the culture that I returned to was not the same culture I left. And I've been in another culture, immersed in it. And so initially it was a challenging transition. In time, I started doing odd jobs for friends of my parents and discovered that I liked doing tree work outdoors. So one thing led to another, and I bought a truck. I was still living with my parents, but I bought a truck and chainsaws and other equipment and gradually became independent, moved out of family home, and ran a tree service doing a variety of kinds of tree work, pruning, removal, cabling, fertilizing, and that sort of thing.
And how long did you have that service?
7 years.
And it was located in?
Milton, Massachusetts.
Okay. That takes care of the forestry part. Now we're going to move on to the musical part. You made two albums.
Yes, I did. One was in Korea called TV with Tomorrow Without TV, Kerek Omnan Neo. And that was a real ball making that with other volunteers in the Peace Corps who played a variety of both Korean instruments and Western instruments as well. And we made this album in 3 or 4 days. I was kind of co-producer of it, and it was just a lot of fun and a lot of talent.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then what was the second album that you did?
And the second album grew out of my wife and I had a ministry in hunger, addressing hunger, and we were involved with the Greater Boston Food Bank and the Walk for Hunger, and went to a 2-week workshop in Washington, D.C. at the World Hunger Education Service, where we were educated about the disparities of food distribution and in the globally as well as in the United States. And so I've always been interested in music from the time I was very young. I grew up in a musical household, and I played the guitar and the piano, and I sang. And so I became motivated to combine my interest, my commitment to addressing hunger with my music. And I composed some songs, and I borrowed some other gospel music. And
what was the name of the record?
Carry the Dream.
Okay.
And it's a good album.
Naturally. Naturally.
So, well, partly because I had some wonderful musicians.
That helps.
I really did. They were top-notch. And they were kind of doing this on the side because union mm-hmm. musicians...
Yeah. I get it. All right, we've touched on forestry and music, so I guess we'd better go on to ministry.
Right. Well, now in a way, there's a path through all these things, too.
Oh, yes.
Through ministry. Peace Corps, in a sense, mm-hmm. was a kind of ministry.
When we talked earlier, you said that you were an explorer regarding the ministry.
Yes, that's how I saw myself.
Meaning what?
Meaning that the normal path was to get approved as a postulant by your vestry and the diocese. And I did not do that. I was not ready to do that. I wanted to explore ministry by going to seminary. And I hadn't been to school in over 15 years. And
that's tough.
Yeah.
That's tough.
But I discovered that I wasn't a bad student.
No.
Everybody
has a learning style.
Yeah. And I enjoyed the studies a lot.
And when did you graduate?
1984.
And when were you ordained?
I was ordained to the diaconate in 1985 and to the priesthood in 1986.
And then we talked a bit about your career path, and you said that you were chaplain at the White Mountain School in Littleton, New Hampshire, and you were there for 2 years.
Correct, yeah.
Then you went to Brevard, which was in western North Carolina, and you were an assistant rector there?
Yes, I was, yeah.
For 5.5 years?
Yeah, that's correct.
Then you went to Norwalk, Connecticut. You bounced around a lot.
Well,
to Christ Church.
I am an explorer.
Yes, you are. And you were at Christ Church for 5 years, but it wasn't a good fit because it was too cityfied.
Yeah.
Anybody that ran a tree service has got to be a country boy.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
I missed the country, and when we came to Salisbury, and it was just one of those sparkling July summer days, and we both fell in love with the area right away.
A lot of people do. A lot of people do. When's, officially, did you come to St. John's?
Officially, my first Sunday was the first Sunday of Advent in 1998.
And how long were you at St. John's?
Oh, and just by the way, off the record or on it?
Either.
I had contracted Lyme disease before my opening Sunday.
That's not fun.
Well, I tested positive. I never really felt sick, but...
Yeah.
It did add to the excitement of the occasion.
Well, that's one way of putting it. You are creative.
My opening title sermon was Getting to Know You from South Pacific.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Did you sing it?
Yes.
Good. I like that. Kept people awake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll surprise them, too. Yeah. Well, that's the point. You were at St. John's for 15 years?
15 years, yeah.
And when did you retire?
February of 2014.
Now, while you were at St. John's, you did something else that was controversial about the Christmas tree lights.
Oh, well, we don't talk about the Christmas tree lights. Yes, I replaced the white bulbs at Christmas time with beautiful multicolored bulbs, joyfully celebrating the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. And when I go by at night the next time, I'm going to check to see if St. John's has gone back to the traditional, and I think they have.
I think they have, yeah.
All righty. Is there anything that you'd like to say about St. John's before we move on to the Spanish program?
Well, it was a good place for me. It had... some history that made it challenging. Mm-hmm. I had my own history, which
was challenging.
Which was challenging,
yeah.
Too. And but it was a place where I felt welcomed and where I could dare to be creative.
That's important.
And, yeah, not always with popularity, but...
I'll tell you a couple of good stories about Henry Chiara afterwards.
Okay. So I like being there. It was it's hard to sum up in 15 years, but I felt like I did.
You did a good job.
I did a good job. Yeah. I helped start several ministries in music: the New England Baroque Soloist, the Coffee House. A coffee house, which was, and also the drummers. We've had a drumming class there every week.
You weren't there. We used to have chamber music at St. John's back in the 80s. My husband was in charge of that. And we would bring up from New York, usually a quartet from the New York Philharmonic, to present chamber music maybe 3 or 4 times a year. So music and St. John's have gone together for a long time.
Right, I guess I picked up on an earlier tradition.
You did.
Without knowing it.
Well, good things come around.
Yeah.
All right.
And that's still going.
Yes, it's a different format because now it's Baroque rather than chamber music. But yes, it's still going. Right. And it's important. It's important.
Yeah. And it's the church is beautiful itself, and the acoustics are really good.
Oh yes. I know. And it's, and I don't mean this in an unkind way, it's small enough so that you feel part of the musical experience.
Right.
And that's important too. That's important too.
It's not cozy, but it's close to
We enjoyed it. We enjoyed it. Now, because you are, I won't say an iconoclast, but creative, and you said to me that you tend to have sympathy for others, you created a mass in Spanish.
Yep.
What came first, the mass or some of the language programs or...
I think the language programs came first, but I'm not absolutely sure.
Okay. Tell me about that.
Well, it was called Puentes, which means bridges. In other words, cross-cultural bridges. And we had both English classes for Hispanics, and we had Spanish classes for Anglos. And sometimes we'd... It'd be the same night, and we'd meet at break time and practice our language skills with each other. And so it was very gratifying that way in terms of making a bridge. And then one of the students, one of the families, became interested in having a misa, a worship service, in Spanish. And I was excited by that.
Well, now, if you did your Peace Corps work in Korea, had you studied Spanish in either college or high school, or was this a language you needed to learn fresh?
Yes, 3 years in high school at Milton Academy and 1 year at Yale, and then nothing for decades.
What was the name of the academy?
Milton.
Okay.
In Milton, Massachusetts.
Where
I was very involved in music, by the way.
When you came in 98, did you realize that there was a Spanish population in town, or did it just gradually seem to?
I was sort of surprised to see Latinos in the area. And I think either my perception grew gradually, or else the movement of immigrants into the area became gradually. But anyway, I became aware of and reached out to them when I saw them, greeting them or whatever, because I suspected they were probably undocumented, probably lonely for their own country. And
it's so nice to hear your language.
It is.
It's so nice.
So I, having observed that, that led to the idea of starting up this language program.
When you had the language program, approximately how many people were involved?
Classes were maybe 15.
About right.
12 to 15, something like that. Sometimes less, sometimes a little more.
And how
we
often?
We couldn't count on people to get there every time,
yeah.
So attendance was...
How often did you meet?
It was either once or twice a week.
Okay. And for how long?
An hour, hour and a half.
And you met in the lower parish rooms?
Yes, the Spanish class met upstairs.
Okay.
They were terrific. They were. They were just...
They work hard. Hmm? They were working hard.
Yeah.
No.
And they just had a real fellowship, too.
That helps. In 2016, there was more of a surge, and you met somebody at the transfer station that asked you to do something. This was this.
Right. More specifically, Donald Trump had just been elected president, and I realized, I could see that there was a lot of fear in the Hispanic community. And at the same time, after he took office, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, became a lot more active in the region, raids and that sort of thing, traffic stops. So my sense was... at the time, too, I needed to do something.
Sure.
I needed, my vocation was sort of dormant at that point. So it was a great gift to me to be able to then start to serve the Hispanic community. And so not long after the election, my friend Esperanza met me at the transfer station by chance and said, she said, "Father, we've got to pray." And by that I took it, she meant that we've got to get together to worship. Mm-hmm. And she was right, and I could see that right away. And so we planned our first service within a week or two, and got people together at Trinity Lime Rock, and off we went.
Now, is this sort of the initiation of, and I'm going to mess this up, Vecinos Seguros?
Vecinos Seguros started at the same time.
Is that an ad hoc organization?
Well, it's organized. I have 200 people on an email list.
Is it a nonprofit?
It works through Trinity Lime Rock Church, so it works through a nonprofit.
Okay.
So yes, the answer is no salaries.
And do you, how do I put this? What do you actually do with this?
Well, what I did and what I'm doing now are quite different, because I am easing out of this ministry, phasing out.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, there were crises occurring in the Hispanic communities, so I raised money, mostly through an email network of mostly white folks.
Gringos.
Gringos.
That's the extent of my Spanish.
mostly por la mayor parte gringos, for the most part gringos.
Mm-hmm.
So we also felt that part of our, because I formed a committee, we had several committees that came and went, and some worked well and others didn't, and that was part of the learning process.
Mm-hmm.
Part of our mission was to educate gringos about what's going on. And so we had more than a few well-attended workshops, 40, 50, 60 people coming. And they in turn became, most of them became included in the Vecinos Seguros email, group email list.
Mm-hmm.
We had Glenn Formica, who was an immigration lawyer.
I'm sorry?
Glenn Formica, G-L-E-N-N, Formica, who is a dedicated...
Where does he come from?
He comes from New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
And he came up, I'd gotten to know him through other circumstances, and he came up and did several workshops explaining what the legal procedures are and how complex they are, and people ask questions, well, why does it take so long, and blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we all learned that the legal process is sort of a dull instrument.
Did you personally attend court hearings?
Yes.
And ICE arrests?
Yes.
And if there was a disaster in the Spanish community, how did you help?
Well, I mobilized the Vecinos Seguros network. In one case, the house burnt down completely, and so we helped get together furniture and clothing and money. There's a family that still comes to the Misa.
Good.
And they're lovely. They've been through more than
most people are. Most people are.
Yeah.
When you get to know them, what doesn't make any difference the color of their skin or their language, most people are wonderful.
Yeah.
They just want to be treated like human beings.
That's it. And in many cases, they were not being treated as human beings.
Which is wrong. Now, you've been involved in this for many years. Has the Latino population changed as far as country location?
More Guatemalans have moved into the area.
How about Ecuadorians?
Some Ecuadorians, Colombians. A Venezuelan man was here recently looking for work. He'd been one of the group that had been shipped from the border to Florida.
Yeah.
And we couldn't help him, so he went to Florida to visit, to work with family.
Something else you'd like to add before we close?
That's it.
It's up to you.
I would just say, in my recent experiences, that working with the Latino community has been very fulfilling for me. We have had a food program too, as part of Vecinos Seguros, and giving out gift food cards, getting to know people, some a little, some more. They call me Padre Juan.
Padre.
J-U-A-N, like Juan. Juan.
Okay.
And
that makes sense.
They're very open and affectionate and
wonderful people.
Yeah, wonderful people. And I just respect a lot what they have been through, what it took to get here, mm-hmm. the cost of that emotionally
mm-hmm.
and financially, and wish them well.
Thank you so much.